Welcome to the 12th House Podcast. I'm Michelle, your co-host and the head witch in charge here at Holisticism. Delighted to have you. Welcome back to the squirrels who have been here before, to our new squirrels. Hi, how's it going? The 12th House Podcast is a little corner of the internet where we bring together creativity, inspiration, intuition, spiritual shit, the metaphysical, the practical, tactical stuff that comes to running a business. And we bring it to you so that you can do your sacred work, so you can self-actualize, so you can be the biggest you could possibly be. It's really fun. You're going to like it, I think. Anyway, let's get into today's episode.
Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Wallace.
Hello, 12th House listeners. Welcome to Friday Philosophies. This is our weekly Friday show where we go through mental models, frameworks, meaning-making systems, rituals, habits, lifestyles of those people that we admire, and new lenses that we love and try and use ourselves sometimes. So hopefully you can try it on in your life.
Amen. A new way of living, laughing, and loving, you know?
Honestly. Okay, so if you're new to the 12th House Podcast, welcome. Love to have you here.
Welcome.
If you've been around the block for a little while, you may or may not have heard us talk about essentialism. There are a few books and authors, but more specifically, I would say frameworks and ideas that we repeat because they almost always bear repeating and are endlessly inspiring. And I feel, especially this one, I need to endlessly review this because I don't think I'm inherently an essentialist person in most areas of my life. I could say maybe in my home I am. But otherwise, I'm a maximalist.
Ugh.
How about you?
Deep agree. I think we buried the lead. We're talking about essentialism. But yes, essentialism is like, it is Bible for us. It is canon. And it's so pure and hard. It's simple, but not easy.
Yes.
You know?
There you go.
Essentialism is also a little strict. Like sometimes I feel like essentialism is kind of like...
Yes. Rigid.
Yeah. And it like kind of makes me feel a little bit bad sometimes, but not in like a you're a piece of shit way, but like it's so clear and obvious. Like if you're an essentialist, it's so clear. And I think that's the point, right? Is to like make it abundantly obvious what you should do and what you shouldn't do. But that can be like a little triggering to me sometimes, to be just honest, just throwing it out there.
It's reminding me of our episode on Via Negativa because you know what it is not? Essentialism is not hedonistic and it is not laissez-faire.
No, it's the opposite of chill. It is not chill at all.
Essentialism has no chill. So Greg McKeown is the author of this book. I came across essentialism first. My ex's mom gave it to him once. I think it was like just when we moved to LA as a birthday or Christmas gift or something. And naturally I was like, what's that? I'm going to read it. And I read it. And was like, this is incredible. This is amazing. And he read it maybe a few months after me. And now in hindsight and a few years later, I noticed that he read it once. He completely internalized it and absolutely executed on that lifestyle in so many ways.
Wow.
And I still very much struggle to execute on this.
Yeah.
And so it's something where it was kind of in his personality to do a lot of these things. But for him, it was very clarifying in terms of finances, who he spent time with. And then also because we had just moved together to LA, he was very judicious and conscientious about how he spent his time on work and whether it was work he was interested in or not. And I feel like this is something I could review weekly and I would not tire of it because it's just not my tendency. It makes me think of a lot of creative, squiggly-brained, intuitive people who have big dreams, want lots of things in life. This is a really hard concept. Also in our society that does say you can have it all, this is a really hard concept to continuously grapple with. So I do find it quite evergreen.
Mm-hmm. It's one of those books that I can go back to over and over again and like always be entertained by it or always like get a new pearl of wisdom no matter how many times. I like listening to this book. No matter how many times I listen to it, I hear a different thing every time I listen.
Oh, okay. I should try and listen to it. I've only read it. Okay, let's get into what is essentialism by defining what it's not. So a non-essentialist spreads their efforts over a wide array of tasks, many of which have little importance or value, or maybe it's kind of a smattering of some are important, some are not, living an essential life is about finding what is truly essential and then eliminating the rest. So he breaks this book down into three parts, which I think are very helpful. The three sections are explore, eliminate, and execute. I don't love that language, execute, but, you know, bear with us.
I also don't love eliminate because it always makes you think of pooping.
Yeah. Yes. And it makes me think of like an elimination diet.
Yeah. And it makes me think of like assassinating people, like eliminate them, you know? Oh, I'm just like,
elimination.
No, it's too much.
Okay. Well, yes, exactly. So fill in those words with what you prefer to use. You can change it up because the theories are helpful.
Yes.
In the exploratory phase, you are figuring out what is important to you. So you're reading, you're also sometimes having a retreat or a period of being unavailable and escaping your regular duties, your regular modes of communication so that you can hone your observational skills. And he has this saying of becoming the journalist of your own life. You're looking for the lead in your week or in your day when you're the journalist of your life. So you're looking for what's been coming up, the most fascinating things that are happening to me, and how can I use this as information to expand my awareness in this exploratory phase of what's actually really important to me. He also kind of goes over some general maintenance tips of life, which is you need good sleep for clarity. You need to be well rested because you need to essentially protect the most important asset, which is yourself, the brain, the body, and the soul. So you got to protect the asset, which is you, that you're investing in when you're doing this essentialism work. But you also need to play because expansive awareness happens in a play state. So sometimes the only way to figure out a problem or if you're stuck or if you're living a scattered life is to pull yourself out, do a little play, expand your awareness.
I like this idea of finding the lead, like what is the most interesting thing? And like when we are confronted with essentialism, we find every reason to not be essential. Oh no, I can't cut that thing. Oh no, I need to be in all the places all the time. I couldn't possibly delegate XYZ. And like, these are all things that I say, right? Like I couldn't possibly delegate that to someone else. No, I need to pick up the dry cleaning. I couldn't like get a task rabbit to do it, whatever. We come up with all these reasons as to like why. But I think what is very helpful is saying like, well, what's the most interesting thing? Or like, what's the theme that's coming up? What's the hook? Because that's what a lead is, right? L-E-D-E. When we're writing a story, the lead is like what gets someone hooked in and makes them read the rest of your article. What is the most important thing? All of a sudden, it's like that gets sifted out of the sand and like the muck that is the other parts of your life. And it's like, well, of course I want to go towards the most interesting thing. Of course I need to make space for that because it's like emerging from, I don't know, the mud, like as, right, this like bright, shiny thing that's in my life.
When you said that, I was thinking of like sifting for gold, like as if
panning, exactly. And it's like, oh, right, like panning, there's like sludge on the bottom of this thing, but there's the gold there. And like, it's coming up to the surface. I need to like keep sifting in order to see it. Because if you don't sift, you're never going to find the gold.
100%. And this is that's a perfect segue into one of his other things, which Michelle and I will say, debate this and feel that it's binary, is he ascribes to that if it's not a hell yes, it's a hell no thing.
I don't subscribe to that.
I don't either. But I think it is helpful to consider it in this context, yes, because what he's trying to say is when you're in this exploratory phase and the sifting, part of what you're trying to do is figure out what do you really want to say yes to? What lights you up? What makes you feel energized? Because you have to know your big yeses, because the more you say yes, the more you'll have to say no. Mm-hmm. So this is another one of his tenets, is you can do anything, but you can't do everything. And we've added all at once.
Yep.
Because life is long.
Amen, sister. Life is long.
Again, you can do anything, but you can't do everything. So a big part of this, thinking back to a previous episode, is the 80-20 rule, because not all effort is created equal. Mm-hmm. So what do you want to say yes to? Because guess what? Some things are going to take more effort than others, and therefore you're on lookout for the best yeses, because you will have to get used to saying no to a lot.
Mm-hmm. I do want to highlight something that sticks with me about essentialism, which is that if you don't choose, other people choose for you. So if you don't choose what your most important priorities are, then by default, other people are choosing what your priorities are. For example, like if you spend your day, your work day in your email, replying to other people's emails, they're deciding how you spend your time as opposed and what your to-do list is, as opposed to you actively saying, actually, like my work, the thing that I needed to make is how I should be spending my time, not just answering other people's questions.
That is one of my biggest lessons from the book as well. Even if you think of something as benign as, let's say, your social life, sometimes, and we've all been there, when you're in a situation where you just say yes to invitations, you're like, yeah, I'll go to that thing. So-and-so invited me. Okay. Yeah, sure. Okay. And part of what happens there is instead of you, you know, sometimes pulling back and thinking, what is my intention for this weekend? What do I want to make time for? This is literally me talking to myself about me just being like, yeah, yeah, because I'm in a new city. I'm like, I must say yes to friends and whatever, versus being like, what do I actually want to do this weekend? How do I want to spend my time? What would be nourishing for me? And pulling back and balancing those two. Because again, if you don't have, and this gets to one of his parts later, is really exercising your no muscle takes a lot of conscientious work, especially because we do live in a society that is constantly like, yes is better, more is better. And we're mostly about maximizing. So when you're in the elimination phase or the second part of his kind of theory here, you're clarifying. So you're trying to figure out, what is my essential intent? And going back to this idea, it's harder to say no than it is to say yes. So in a way, it's much easier to go through our lives just being like, sure, yes. Because saying no, you have to deal with the fear of disappointing someone. We often feel like we have to explain things to people that we don't really need to explain. Or we're not in the practice of knowing how to, he says, firmly, resolutely, and calmly saying no, no thank you, or I don't want to do that. Like, it's actually takes practice.
And you have to be accountable. Like, you're accountable to your life. You're not able to blame other people for like, oh, this is such a waste of my time. Oh, I don't want to do this thing, but I have to. If you don't want to do something and you're doing it, that's your fault. Nobody else's fault. And that can be a tough pill to swallow.
No, that's 100%. Correct, because in his view, essentialists view choices as empowering. Choices are empowering because, to your point, we're defining our schedule, we're deciding how we spend our time and what our priorities are. So you can't really be like, oh, well, so-and-so is just scheduling my life, so I can't do that. Or family's just taking over my life, or, you know, fill in the blank. We all have different things that come up that really push our boundaries. And part of that is trade-offs. The concept of trade-offs is really important here in essentialism for him, because you have to recognize that you can't have it all. You don't have endless energy and time in the day, so you have to focus on what truly matters.
That's true. Okay, very exciting news. The doors are now open to our private members community, the North Node.
Crowd goes wild. But really, this doesn't happen often. And this is your chance to come and join us in our wonderful membership community with other intuitive, squiggly brained, creative baddies.
Amazing people. True. When people ask me, like, what is the North Node for? First off, we've been running it for the last 4 years. So it's this gigantic library at this point of lessons, courses, challenges, spiritual workshops that we've taken from the holisticism team and from guests. But so there's a lot there just in and of itself in the library. But I really think that the North Node is for someone who is at a crossroads. I think about the hero's journey and when the hero decides to take the step into the special world from the ordinary world. And I think that's what the North Node is for a lot of people. It's them saying yes to this quest or to walk down this new path, to get out of how they've been thinking normally, or to get out of their rituals or habits that have created the life around them that they look at and they're like, I don't know if this is still for me, but they're not quite sure what comes next. And for some people, that's running a business or starting a business. For others, that's a creative endeavor. For other people, that's moving across the world. It's different depending on who you are. And I love that the North Node supports all of those things. Yes, there's intuitive business support, of course, and knowledge. There's spiritual support, there's self-knowledge. But really, I think what the North Node offers is different prisms through which to look at and understand your world and how to apply a lot of what we do here, talking about different styles of thinking, how to actually implement that in your life, whether it's in your business or your personal practice or in your relationship.
And to Michelle's point, it's really comprised with so many different people. It's not just business owners. We have something for everyone at any transition point.
Every quarter, we have a different concept. We teach a course. We have guest experts come in. And then we have an implementation challenge so that you can take what you've learned in theory and apply it to your life. In addition to live workshops, live events, Akashic Records readings, astrology readings, human design readings, one-on-one work with the team, all of the above. But you can learn more by checking out the link in our show notes. The doors to the North Node are open from summer solstice, June 21st, all the way to July 2nd. And our summer quarter begins on July 3rd. So if you are down to join us, we'd love to have you. You can learn more at the link in our show notes.
Finding what truly matters is in the exploratory phase. So this kind of gets us to, once you've got your clarity on what your intents are, what you're going to say no to, what you want to say yes to more often, then in the final phase, which he calls executing, it's really about following through on those actions. And one of my favorite things that he says is it's totally okay to uncommit to something. It's totally fine that when you've made a commitment to something that you've realized is not essential, it's so fine to step back and be like, I made a mistake actually, or I overcommitted myself, or you know what, I'm going to have to not join this thing or do that thing that I said I would because I've reevaluated and this is not essential for me. You don't have to say it that way.
Mm-hmm. That's really hard though, like uncommitted, like basically going back on what you said you would do, especially if like integrity is one of your core values or something you think about a lot, because you said you would, integrity is just saying, doing what you said you would do. So to change your mind can be hard. And a lot of us also have programming that changing your mind is flaky. It's not, but we've been told that. And we don't want to be viewed as like flaky or unreliable or irresponsible. So we like put ourselves last and we grin and bear it, or like, what's the opposite of grin? We like cringe and bear it, you know, as we like go through something we don't want to do.
Yeah. One of the things that brings up, which is what we talked about, not on this podcast, but is the fallacy of sunk costs. Mm-hmm. So often people don't want to uncommit to something because they feel like they've already committed this much. They've already sunk this much money, this much time, this much energy into something. So, oh, I can't renege on this. But actually, one of the things he brings up, which I feel like is another thing where it just cuts through, he's like, you have the choice between being popular and being respected when you say no.
That's true.
Yeah, right? You're like, oh, damn, can't really argue with that. And he's like, the way to be respected is when you have a good habit of saying no with clarity, with calmness, and resolutely. Because there is something about when you say, no, I can't make it, and you're not like, because my dog died and my cat is missing and blah, blah, blah. You don't have to explain yourself. You say it firmly in a very respectable way, but you also say it resolutely. There's some definity to that that is also respectful. Mm-hmm. But it might not make you popular.
Mm-hmm. It also is so hard when you're like, I just want to be a people pleaser and I want to be popular and I want to be respected. Can I be popular and respected? Is it possible?
Yeah. How about both?
Get you a girl who can do both.
Exactly. Exactly. In order to do that, we all need wives. I think we've decided.
I think about this constantly. I think about that all the time. So are we missing anything about essentialism?
Well, we have to know, is essentialism a matcha or a coffee drinker or just water like Pharrell?
What do you think?
I think it's an espresso at a counter.
Yeah, I think so too.
And is like, that's all I need.
Yep, I think that's right. What's the one weird thing about essentialism?
As strict and rigid as essentialism wants to pretend it is, it also likes to play. There's so much about play in this book. Mm-hmm. You have to remove the kind of rigidity vibe that you get from it, because play is really important to the whole philosophy, because it's also about discovery and exploration of your deep longings that you want to say yes to. So it's maybe more spiritual than it sounds.
Yeah. What's the point of like getting essential with your time if you're not spent doing things that are like soul nourishing, like just to work? That's so stupid.
Amen.
Okay. On the Virgo to Pisces scale, where does essentialism fall?
I feel like it's super Pisces. It's feeling.
You think?
It's feeling feels.
Okay.
Kind of. On the surface, not so much. But once you get deeper, it's like, what do you really want? What makes you feel lit up and excited? What's a hell yes? It's deeply about the feels once you go beneath the surface. On the surface, it seems super Virgo. Mm. It's like, nope, just these things. That's it.
Just the facts, ma'am. Okay, I get that. I think that right next to Pisces in the zodiac wheel is Aries. And I kind of get Aries energy from essentialism because it's like pretty cut. It can be very fun. And it can also be like, I know what I want. You know, like this is it. And I'm getting it.
I love that.
Okay. Is it a hobbit hole or a morning glory?
I feel like it's got to be a morning glory.
There's one story in this book. He talks about how he and his family wake up in the morning and for 30 minutes, they all read together before they do like breakfast and go to school and go to work. And I just like love that idea. Do I know if it's possible for me? Probably not. But like, I love that idea of everyone waking up and reading our little books together, like Rhodes reading his little picture book. Well, Ethan and I read the paper.
Oh my God, it's so cute. That's too lovely. That will happen, at least for a little while.
Let's cross our fingers. Okay, if you had to give it an archetype, sun, moon, and rising, what would you give essentialism?
Sun, carpe diem, dude.
Robin Williams in Dead Poets Society, his character.
Oh, I love that. Great reference. Okay, moon, Robin Williams in Birdcage. Rising, Robin Williams in
Mrs. Doubtfire.
Exactly. Real family man. Ultimately,
that's true.
He's like, I just want to spend more time with my family. Like, that's why I wrote this book, so you all can read it and I can deuces read with my lovely 10 kids or whatever. I think we nailed it, honestly. Robin Williams archetypes for the win.
Maybe that should be our new, like, which Robin Williams character is this thing?
There's a lot to choose
from. There really are. Okay, so are you an acolyte of essentialism or do you turn away from the word?
I'm like a fan. I'd like to be an acolyte. I don't know. I'm always like, did I make it? Am I in the club?
I know. I would be like kicked out of the cult because I'm not essentialist enough.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. I think that's where I'm at. How about you?
Yeah, I'm like an aspirational essentialist. I want it. I think about the concepts a lot. And I also have like five different frying pans at home. So like, am I truly an essentialist when it comes to I have like six pairs of jeans, but they all mean something different to me, you know, and they look different on me.
Right.
I don't want just one pair of jeans. I want the options. So I'm not quite an essentialist in like execution, but in theory, I feel like I'm thinking about it a lot.
Yeah, maybe you are in certain areas of life, but not others. Like, I really appreciate now that we're talking about this, that he doesn't bring fashion into the mix. I think if he did, I would close the book and be like, whatever, man.
I do think he mentions it at some point of like
the Steve Jobs of it all.
Yeah, like the essentialism of a uniform and how that can like save you brain space. But he doesn't harp on it, to your point.
Right.
Well,
that's it.
Wallace, you did a great job explaining essentialism. So you don't have to read the book, everyone who's listening to this, but it is a good thing to have in your back pocket, I think. And it's a good theory. Atomic Habits is like essentialism in action. It's like how you can apply essentialism to your life, I think.
That's true. Atomic Habits, another more spiritual book than you think.
Yes, it's not about productivity, guys.
Another book along the same vein, Oliver Berkman's 4,000 Weeks.
That's a good one.
Pretty damn good. The audiobook and the regular book.
Very good.
All right, that's it.
Well, that was a great one. Thanks, Wallace.
No problem. So if you like this, let us know. DM us, write to us.
Leave a review.
We love when you leave a review. It means so much to us. And you can also subscribe to this podcast and help support the creation of it. We give you a free extra mini audio course every month for all of our subscribers. And all that information is in the show notes. We are dropping another episode for the subscribers soon, so keep a lookout. And we will see you next week. We love you.
Love you. Bye.
Bye. The 12th House is produced by yours truly, Wallace Miller-Blanchard. Our theme music is made by Nathan McKay, and our wonderful editing is done by Softer Sound Studios, who you can find more information about in our show notes.